Hey guys, it's Lindsay Gensel, and you're listening to Refocused, a podcast all about ADHD. Just a reminder, the show is taking a little break to get in some much-needed R&R, and we'll be back with brand new episodes exploring all things ADHD in April. In the meantime, we're sharing some of the incredible conversations we had during our very first Refocused Together back in 2022. And of course, as always, I just want you to know I am so grateful for your continued support. Thank you so much for sticking with us during the full-blown roller coaster of a year. It has been a trip, one that has been so much better thanks to all of you. Remember, you can always connect with the show through email, hello@refocuspod.com, or on social @refocuspod and @LindsayGensel. And now, let's get started with today's show, Mark Almodovar and Vulnerability. Four years ago, Mark Almodovar was on a walk when he had an idea to start a support group for men with ADHD. He wanted to create a place to help men with the condition feel safe, truly understood, and connect with others so they could boost their self-confidence. Diagnosed when he was 16, Mark knew all too well the awkward dance of getting mental health help as a man living in a society that essentially doesn't make space for that. It started as a small Facebook group with about a dozen members. Once the pandemic hit, it grew to around 12,000. And then Mark expanded the group's offerings to include even more resources, like weekly Zoom meetings, a podcast, even a Discord channel. He's become a community builder, helping men open up and express their emotions about ADHD, accept themselves as they are, and know they are worthy of having a wonderful life, even with a neurodiverse brain. Mark, I'm so excited to chat with you today. I think what you're doing for the community of men with ADHD is so important, and it's just really changing the narrative and providing that support and that safe space. And you obviously know that the more we talk about this and we talk about the way ADHD shows up in our lives, the more people we're helping. So thank you for that. And thank you for joining us on Refocus Together.
Thank you so much.
I ask all of my guests to go back to kind of their diagnosis origin story, so to speak. So if you want to go back to life before you were diagnosed and kind of what led to you seeking out an assessment.
So my entire life, I always knew that I was a little bit different than everyone else. I remember in report cards, it would say things like, Mark is there, but not really there. Right. So looking back at my childhood photos, even, I mean, I'm usually distracted and in my own world. And I was the kid with sloppy handwriting, disorganized desks, all those type of things. So I always knew there was a little bit of a difference in me because, you know, when things didn't manage to capture my interest, they didn't have my interest at all. But when there was something that I did genuinely like, it wasn't just a focus, it was an above and beyond hyper-focused, nonstop thinking about it type of thing. So that's always been me. But it wasn't up until I was 16 years old that I actually had gotten the diagnosis. I was struggling with my mental health, had a lot of social anxiety, was just really unsure of who I was. And that led to me getting some support from some mental health professionals. I got diagnosed with inattentive ADHD with a little bit of hyperactivity in there. For me, that moment was almost like a confirmation of what I already intuitively kind of knew, that there was something a little bit different about how my brain works, right? So at that moment, it was just affirmation that, you know, my brain works a little bit differently. Now it's just about finding the tools that are needed for you to thrive and do well for yourself in this world.
What were some of the immediate changes you made after getting your diagnosis? You know, you mentioned it's just so important to know how your brain works so that you can change things and figure out a way that you can function at the highest level possible and in a world that's not built for you. So what was that like?
So, I mean, the immediate thing for me was definitely the feeling less crazy thing, right? That was helpful because my whole life I just felt that I was doing something wrong, but what was really going on is I just didn't have the tools that I needed to do well for myself and take action and all that stuff. So I did get some help right away, but it wasn't anything tremendous. It wasn't until really years later that I actually started to take my on ADHD really seriously and just started prioritizing the need for support and tools that I needed to thrive. So I think one of the biggest changes for me was that I let go of this idea that I'm still letting go of it right now. This idea of me having to do things all on my own and having to just struggle with something and figure it out all by myself, right? So letting go of that idea and understanding that it's not just okay and acceptable for me to get help, but it's quite needed, right? And it's quite normal. And breaking down that ideology was a tremendous help for me because there's a lot of humility in that. A lot of men struggle with that decision altogether of saying they need help when they need it. So there's breaking down that barrier too. But really just, I would say the first big step for me was building a sense of comfort of knowing that it's okay to be in a broken spot and reaching out for help is 100% a good idea.
I'm always curious to hear because I've interviewed so many different people. I mean, talking an age range from 14 to late 50s. When you were diagnosed, what was your idea of what ADHD was like? You know, in that moment, what came to mind? Because I think we all have such an outdated idea of what it is, but it's also been interesting to hear how we all view it.
I always thought of it as just the hyperactive, nonstop talking kid in school, troublemaker, all that type of stuff. So I actually didn't align with that way of thinking of what ADHD was because in school, like I never caused any issues. You know what I mean? My mom always told me about myself as a child that I was never somebody who caused any type of trouble or anything like that. I was pretty quiet for a good amount of my life. So my initial thought was that ADHD was just one thing, right? A lot of what I've learned is that there is a little bit of hyperactivity in me. Like I'm sitting on this chair right now, but I'm definitely fidgeting. You know what I mean? Like I like to keep busy and stuff like that. But most of my hyperactivity exists in my mind, right? That's where the 100 miles an hour brain is really working. And it was a way of thinking about ADHD that was accurate to a degree, but it wasn't the whole picture, right? I never thought of it as the person who was distracted all day long, to answer your question.
And the reason I ask is I was having this conversation with another guest for Refocus Together, and we were talking about the idea that we felt kind of epitomized ADHD from our childhood. And I'm a little bit older than you, but, and I hate admitting this, but when I was a kid, the people who got help in class or were diagnosed with ADHD at the time, ADD, and we all knew it, they were put into this dumb category. They were put into a less than category. And the reason I bring this up is your idea of help. Getting help is so important. And I would have been such a better student had I been more open to getting help. But we have this negative connotation on it. Like if you ask for help, it's implying that you aren't capable, which is not the case. It's really the only way to make it to that next step. And once you start to acknowledge and accept that, I mean, it's just a game changer, but we aren't prepared to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the whole thing too, is that there's not just resources and plenty of information out there for you, but there's also, and this is where I come in, right? And this is where I fall in love with my work and all that type of stuff. There's also people out there who relate a lot to your journey, who have accomplished some of the things that you seek to accomplish and are more than willing to relate to you. On top of that, you know, like be that additional support system for you to get out of whatever difficult situation you're experiencing, right? But it's part of being human. Like we're social creatures. We're here to help each other out. And ADHD is incredibly challenging, right? So there's no need to go through it on your own. You know, we might as well go through it listening to amazing podcasts like this one, being on a great support group, all that type of stuff. You know, that's how we really get from point A to point B.
I think every conversation I've had with people, I've learned something new. And that's coming from somebody who hosts a podcast about ADHD. And granted, it's a new podcast and I have a newer diagnosis, but it is so complex. And the way ADHD shows up in everyone's lives is so different. And it's also something that ebbs and flows. You know, you may not have a connection to rejection sensitive dysphoria. And then one day you do, you know, there's like, there's things that come and go. And so I'm curious, when you look at how ADHD has shown up in your life, what are some of the things that are complex for you and are challenges and are things that you're working through?
I would say the biggest thing for me has unquestionably been my confidence, right? So it's kind of like growing up in a world where you are operating the way that we do in a society in which does not operate the way that we do. We are constantly exposed to our, what we'll call quote unquote shortfalls, right? So from time management issues to like what I mentioned on my report card, that Mark is never paying attention, all that type of stuff. This leads to a lot of struggles with confidence. And a lot of my work has been most definitely building tools in place, putting tools in place, like getting adequate sleep, exercise, Pomodoro techniques, all that type of stuff. That's been helpful. But a lot of my work and a lot of my struggles have been within my confidence. What I've had to do the work of with the support of therapists and coaches and all that is understanding what my strengths are, understanding how I operate, right? How to navigate this world with my brain and pay bills on time and all that type of stuff. Yes, but it's been a lot of self-awareness of what I'm good at and putting myself in environments in which my strengths work for me, right? So to answer your question, it's building self-esteem, knowing that my strengths have a place in this world. It's definitely been getting support in the areas that I don't naturally thrive in. Like, you know, I'm not going to remember to pay my bills. So shout out to automatic payments, right? Like things like that have been really helpful for me. And then just connecting with other people and showing up in environments as myself, as opposed to who I've always felt that I needed to be, right? Like definitely having, seeking out and having friendships in which people actually accept me for who I am, as opposed to someone that I'm not. You know what I mean? Like a lot of my life has consisted a lot of people pleasing and wanting to be this certain type of person. And for me, like one of the things that's changed a lot in the past 2-3 years is, number one, as I'm showing up to this podcast and I'm showing up to any social situation, you're getting me, right? You're not getting anyone else. You're getting me. And understanding that if somebody has a problem with that, that's their problem. And the people that accept me, these are the people that I want. That makes sense?
Totally.
Went on a bit of a tangent there, but.
No, I mean, everyone, it's just so funny. I should have made a chart of every person who said that in these interviews, because it's, I went off on a tangent, or that was a really long answer. And it's like, no, that's what I want. It's kind of, I think that's when the truth comes out, is when we just speak freely.
Yep. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah. And a big thing for me is, because getting into the people pleasing thing, because I know a lot of us can relate to that. For me, it's been a lot of work of just being intentional. And even as I'm asking myself, right, like one of the things like I'll face, like even doing this interview right now, is this thought of like, I have to display myself as this perfect ADHD coach who's got all his shit together, right? And knows all the do's and don'ts and the perfect ADHD hack and the perfect answer to all your questions and all that type of stuff. But my work to this day, and I've progressed in this and I still got some work to do here, has been asking myself, am I showing up as myself right now, who has tons of great value and is amazing and all that? Or am I showing up as the person that I feel that Lindsay needs me to be, right? Like that's a powerful, intentional question for me to pivot back into just being me. Because my whole idea is that, listen, like you can learn all the ADHD hacks and tools and everything like that. You can Google a good amount of this stuff. But my whole work is I want to build the ability of ADHD men and ADHDers in general for us to look at ourselves in the mirror and accept and be proud of what we see and not trying to make us quote unquote normal.
One of the commonalities that I've heard with all of the people I've talked to, and there must be something about ADHD, and maybe it's not even tied to the actual breakdown of what ADHD is, and maybe it's more tied to all of the things that we've all gone through, but everyone is incredibly empathetic and wants to help in whatever capacity that looks like for them. And so it's been interesting to talk to everyone about the different ways they're doing that. And the way you're doing that is focusing in on men specifically with ADHD. And so tell me a little bit about the motivation behind building that community and kind of the evolution that you've seen, because I imagine your numbers are growing the more we talk about things and the more people seek out diagnoses and assessments and all of that stuff.
About 4 or 5 years ago, when I had started making content for people with ADHD and getting myself out there as a coach, I was just speaking about ADHD in general, talking about my own journey, and I made some really great connections, got to work alongside some amazing other content creators and leaders in this community and all that. But as I was building my name for myself and getting to know everyone, I started to realize that although boys and men are so commonly diagnosed with ADHD, very few of us, at least at that time, are actually doing something about it, right? Like there wasn't any support groups or dedicated resources out there for men. And we struggle quite a lot with experiencing an issue and talking about it. And a lot of that has to do with some old traditional ways of thinking of masculinity, where if we have an issue, we're less of a man, all that type of stuff. So I thought to myself, how cool would it be to have a dedicated support group of men with ADHD filled with people who will do things like get interviewed and totally forget what the question was and all that type of stuff, right? Like people who like relate to us and where we can be ourselves. So started off as a small little Facebook group, and we had a little community for a while. And once the pandemic hit, the need for mental health support just kind of like skyrocketed, and our group grew tremendously. And we started doing things like bi-weekly Zoom meetings. We have a podcast, we're on Discord, all that type of stuff. But basically the intention is to provide a safe space for men to actually talk about the issues so that we can learn what to do about it and be more stronger and confident as men with ADHD, as opposed to bottling up our emotions and our problems as if they don't exist.
I'd be interested to know your perspective as a man of color who also has ADHD. And I know that one of the other men who helps run the group is also BIPOC. And that to me speaks volumes about the fact that you are already in a minority group, but you have both taken it upon yourselves to become this safe space. And so I'm wondering if you can touch a little bit on the cultural aspect to being a man who is also a minority and then who has ADHD, and it kind of feels like it's just being layered upon you, these ideologies or stereotypes from society.
So it's definitely a whole journey of its own, no doubt about it. But I think in a lot of, I can't speak on anything else other than what it was like growing up in a Puerto Rican and Cuban household. But I will say that there is still a lot of learning and education of the fact that ADHD even exists in the first place, right? Like it's something that like a lot of our traditional households tend to deny. We don't take it seriously, especially for men, that it is a lot of just get over it, right? If you're experiencing a mental health issue, or just apply yourself more, which makes every ADHDer's eyes roll, right? So there's a lot of need for education, but it feels good to have received those like words of acknowledgement from you, because that's part of the intention of, you know, where we actually kind of like start to be the voice and be the advocates and start to educate, you know what I mean? Because it's important that people who look like us understand that, number one, acting as if your problems don't exist or acting as if it's not a big deal isn't going to be what helps you or grow further in life. The first thing to solving a problem is recognizing that the problem is there. And when I look at Hispanic and Latino communities, there's a lot of need for recognition that ADHD is a big deal.
Well, I appreciate all that you guys are doing. I think it's just so important. And I think as we continue, you know, we're not obviously post-pandemic by any means of the imagination, but a lot of people have started to return to work. And I think the numbers are just going to continue to increase. And I was trying to describe this the other night, but it really feels like, and again, I don't know if it's that I'm hyper-focused on ADHD in the midst of ADHD Awareness Month, but I'll be out in public and I'll be with people who are neurotypical, and they'll ask about the podcast or they'll comment on something that I've shared on social media, and then they'll continue the conversation like, oh, I work with someone who was just diagnosed, or I was dating somebody who was, you know, going through the process. And it feels like we're in this strange area where the awareness is actually being increased. And
I don't know if you see it too. And again, I go back to the, like, are we just so tunnel visioned on it? But that experience of being out with people who would never have brought it up if I wasn't doing the podcast. And it's not that they're just asking about it, like, hey, you're doing this thing, how's it going? They then continue the conversation and they want to add in their 2 cents or their experience. And that, to me, speaks volumes.
Yeah. And it's going to keep going that way with more and more people doing the advocacy and work that's needed. You know what I mean? And that's the importance of vulnerability and honesty amongst us advocates, right? Whenever we're having a Zoom meeting in our group and one of our members shares openly and honestly about something that's hard, right? About, like, I don't know, like, one example is, like, someone will have feelings for a girl and she ghosted him and disappeared and he's feeling insecure about it, but he shares it publicly, right? And there's another member who's nodding their head and relating and listening, and they feel so much more comfortable sharing about it now too, right? And it's this ripple effect of, I guess, both awareness, to your point, and then comfort and safety about, like, the issues that a lot of people who are like us experience. So it's growing and it's only going to continue to with people sharing meaningful content and doing work like yourself.
I want to ask you, I know, you know, you were diagnosed and it took a little while for you to kind of dive into focusing on the advocacy side and taking your ADHD into account. What have you changed in your life to make you a better functioning human? You mentioned sleep, you mentioned exercise, but as a coach, you're running the show. And I'm wondering how you structure things so that it's as easy as possible for you to be successful.
Yeah. So what is this word structure that you speak of? I'm very unfamiliar with it. I like the term structure with me. It's funny. The biggest thing for me is not putting myself in a position in which I have to be the most organized, most administrative person, right? And a position in which I'm spending all day reviewing texts with no images and videos and all that type of stuff. I would not thrive in that. And that would be really hard for me. So for me, it's having awareness of what my strengths are. I'm a heck of a leader. I'm a great community person. I do pretty well in public speaking, all that stuff. So putting myself in a position in which I can actually utilize my strengths and not spend so much time trying to be good at something that I'm not. That's the key thing for a lot of people with ADHD. If you look at a lot of successful ADHDers, one common trait that almost all of them have is that they put themselves in places in which their strengths can make the money and they're doing something that they enjoy at the same time. So I would say that's the biggest thing. And then the other thing too is also outsourcing, right? Like in my ADHD men's support group, I have team members who are quite organized and love administrative stuff and do that part of the role where I'm focusing on my strengths. So it's putting myself in a position of, again, where I'm doing what I'm good at and then working with others in areas that I don't do so well.
Was letting people in to kind of accept that help and let go of it, was that hard?
There's a little bit of humility to it, right? Like, why am I, like, not the one, like, who's great with all this? But it became less hard when I see it in action and I'm practical, right? Like when I see that my group is operating to the best of its capabilities, and I'm able to do a show like this, knowing somebody else is going to be administrating and moderating and helping out and everything like that. It became less hard seeing that come into place, most definitely. And on top of that too, you know, there's nothing wrong with somebody struggling with their vision and throwing on a pair of glasses to see properly, right? It applies, the same rule applies to life with ADHD. You know what I mean? Like there are traits like disorganization and time management that we struggle with, and we may need additional support here. Like, we may need some accommodations. We may need some reminders here and there, and that's okay, right? It's the same way as it's okay to put on a pair of glasses to see better.
I'm wondering, when you look at life and all that you've created and all that you're continuing to create, where do you see yourself thriving and kind of what's getting you up every day?
So 3-4 years ago, I thought that answer would be one-on-one coaching. I thought that was going to be my full thing. And I still like it. It's something I have fun with. But I've fallen in love with community building. I love hosting event spaces. I love sharing openly and honestly and seeing other men relate to my situation and everything like that. So I see myself as doing a lot of community work, in-person online events where I can provide an open, safe, and educational space for men with ADHD on all the different things that we struggle with, right? We're talking relationships, we're talking our confidence, boundaries, you know what I mean? Like workplace, all these things, you know, we're planning on getting into all of it. So for me, I do see myself as informative and educational in these areas, but I see myself as a really, really great community builder and host and that type of stuff. I mean, it just excites me so much. So I can't wait to do more of it.
And you think big, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, no, like we're talking like worldwide, right? Like it's going to be a lot to it. And I'm so thankful to have other group members who are going to be supporting and working on this.
I love that. You know, sometimes it feels very hard when you spend a lot of time with neurotypical people who, you know, I have a lot of friends who are very successful in the line of work that they've gone into, but there's a path that they followed. You know, they're a teacher, they became an accountant, and there were steps along the way. And so what I love about connecting with people who have ADHD is it's like there's no plan. There's no step-by-step process. We dream big and we figure out how to get it done. And I think one of the things that I love that you touched on is, you know, being vulnerable about talking about the things that are hard and the things that are work and figuring out how to be honest with ourselves about that situation. But it's also such a great reminder to know that you're doing all of this work for a community who gets it. Like, if you drop the ball, I get that. And I know what that feels like. And I know the shame and the regret and all the things that come with that. And so when you start to internalize that and you go, oh my gosh, these are the most accepting people for me to be doing this with. This is where I should be growing because we all get it.
Yeah, most definitely. Like it feels good. But on top of that too, it's healing work. Like I said, I mean, like when we are growing up living life with ADHD, we feel as if we're crazy. We feel alone. So it's like half the battle is building up that self-confidence and self-esteem, right? So putting yourself out there, it's brave work, and I'm happy to be doing it, and to know that there's anybody that has benefited from hearing my story, that excites me like nothing else.
There is something about that, man. I got to tell you, you know, like I'm in the midst of 31 episodes, and the days that have been really hard, I always go back to the kind things people have said, because I think we've all been in that scenario where you don't know what it is and you don't know how to change it. And it is so isolating. And when you're surrounded by people who are doing what you can't figure out, you just feel less than. And so to like take that away from somebody, even just a little bit, is so powerful.
Yep. It's heroic, and then I'm honored to be part of it.
Good. And I'm glad that you said that, because I know I struggle with like diminishing that, like, oh yeah. But no, I'm like, Mark, what you're doing is so important, because I do think, you know, we're like our own worst enemies. We can go from the highest high and 5 minutes later just be taken down.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Like I said, I'm on the journey to building my own self-confidence here, and I've come a long way, but I'm still growing here.
So I want to ask you, when you look at the future and what's on the horizon, what are you really looking forward to when it comes to continuing to build this community that you've invested so much time into?
What I'm looking to build is towards a common problem that we've come across in our group, where after a 3-hour long Zoom meeting discussing rejection sensitivity and members relating a lot to it, where people have been saying, this was really great. I've never felt so understood and accepted in my life. Now I just wish I had more of this in person. What we're looking to go more towards is it's just furthering our ability to connect with people that are like you, building friendships, networking, all that type of stuff. We've already seen like what a benefit a sense of understanding has been amongst our community members, but how cool would it be to have your friend right nearby who you can meet up and get coffee with at 4 p.m. and talk about some of the things that you've been going through, and have that in-person aspect as well as an online thing. You know what I mean? But the idea is to double down on the fact that as men with ADHD, that we are not alone, and that friendships who are people who genuinely accept you for you and encourage you. And, you know, like you have two people who are working on the same journey and encouraging each other throughout it. You know what I mean? Like, that is a huge, huge healing factor that all of us are worthy of. And I'm excited to provide more of it.
That's amazing. You know, I actually had someone recently say, and I hadn't thought of it this way, but they were diagnosed later in life and they were kind of like, I don't know what to do now. Like, there's no follow-up. The doctors don't follow up with you after they diagnose you. It's just kind of like all on you. And I don't think we acknowledge just how massive ADHD can be a part of someone's life. And so it's, you know, you feel very alone. And they were, you know, they were saying if, you know, they had had an issue with alcohol, like there's Alcoholics Anonymous and people know about it. And, you know, there's all of these other programs, but for something that is as intertwined through every aspect of our lives, there isn't something like that. And so I think what you're doing is an amazing addition to kind of just this lack of structure, so to speak, to use that word again, you know, when it comes to actual resources.
Yeah. Thank you. It's very cool, you know, and I know how a lot of us men tend to operate, right? The common issue amongst us is that we will go through something difficult and experience a range of emotions and bottle up many of them. And then one thing that tends to happen is that it explodes in some way, shape, or form, right? Much of that is due to the fact that we don't have like a healthy way to get it out. So my work is pushing expressing your emotions in a healthy way for men.
Last thing I want to ask, we're in the midst of ADHD Awareness Month, and one of my goals with this project was to really focus in on sharing as many different experiences as possible. And I've asked everyone if there was one thing that the general public doesn't know about ADHD or a misconception that they're sticking with, what is something that you really wish you could change?
That it's not about getting your kid to stop thinking about fishing all day long and focus more on math. It's about teaching your kid on how to set up a podcast on fishing and join a Twitter room or something like that where he could speak about fishing, things like that. It's creating an environment in which kids with ADHD have their strengths working for them as opposed to trying to make them something that they're not. That's what I want to change is like, these people are great and brilliant. Let's make spaces that work for everyone, not just one type of learner or way of thinking.
Yes, one type of learner. You know, you look back at school and you're like, oh, it was just this one size fits all. And unless it was so noticeable and then there was help. But it was all of us in the middle that were kind of just skating by and masking for so long. And it's sometimes very frustrating to look back at that and go, that could have been better for me, you know?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Like in school, I was into making beats and music producing and stuff like that. I should have been doing more of that. Like all the math equations that I've learned, that they haven't served me much in my life so far.
Well, I feel the same way. I took AP Calculus senior year and I really could have used like health insurance or basic investments, you know, just like an adulting class.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, it was such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Refocus Together for ADHD Awareness Month. And thank you for sharing your story, not just here, but every day that you share it with the community that you're building. And, you know, your goals for the future are incredibly ambitious. And I'm so excited to see your excitement. Like, there's just something that is so contagious about that. So thank you for joining us today. I truly appreciate it.
I appreciate you, my friend. Thank you for having me on.
If you've been enjoying the podcast, I have a very small favor to ask. Could you take a moment to leave us a rating and a review? Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps other people discover the inspiration and insights that we share here. Whether it's a 5-star rating or a few kind words, every bit of support fuels our mission to empower and uplift our community. So if you found value in our conversations, please consider leaving a rating and a review today. And of course, make sure to check in with us over on social media at RefocusPod and at Lindsay Gensel. And remember, you can always connect with the show directly through email hello@refocuspod.com. Thank you for being a part of the Refocus community. Your support keeps us going, and we're so excited for what's ahead for all of us on the other side of this much-needed break. We'll catch you all right back here in April.